You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. In the year of our Lord 2020. Good morning to you. Happy Tuesday. I don't have a project in my life now, and I don't think that that's a good thing. I think that a man without a project is a man without a purpose. I don't think that's a good thing. So I don't want to say I'm struggling, but it's not a natural state for me. Anyway, good morning to you. Will Cosentini's going to join me. Will, who I met in, he'll join me in about an hour. Will is a smart guy and is a caustic guy. Yeah. He's not afraid to dial up the awkward in a conversation, right? And so and you've met some of, you know, obviously you all know Tim Lynch now and Jeff Kinney. And so none of us really are afraid to go there in terms of awkwardness. And so Will showed up in Quantico, first lieutenant. I think he came from 3-8. And he was not afraid to express his opinion or disagree with people. And so he fit right in. And he's a smart guy. And so well thought, blunt spoken. Will's a Naval Academy guy and wound up working for General Amos and then General Dunford in the Commandant's office. So we're going to talk to him about some current events. Also, we'll talk to him. Will lost his wife very suddenly about a year ago, and Carrie Cosentini. And Carrie was a she was an internet person. She was a Facebook person, and a lot of people knew her from that. And then I want to say late January, he got laid off. So anyway, he's so we'll talk about his thoughts on, you know, living through trauma, right? He's got multiple combat deployments. And so it's always interesting to have people that have experienced trauma, not only professionally, but personally, and what their thoughts are. To that end, tomorrow, you're going to hear another installment of kind of the Kantian battlefield study. And you're going to hear from the guy who sent me in the direction of Daryl Horn. And his name is Ray Linebaugh. Now, Ray doesn't tell me his name's not Linebaugh till like after the interview. Till after the interview, the first part of it anyway. It occurs in it'll be two segments. So it's first off is who is Ray Linebaugh and whatnot. And he told me something I've never heard before in my life, and I'll get to that in a second. But he introduced me to Daryl Horn. And so the sequence of Operation Buffalo has to be, when you tell the story of Operation Buffalo, is you got to tell Bravo's story first, because Bravo Company is essentially combat non-effective after that day, right? And so they take 120 casualties out of probably 150 Marines, 147 Marines, 146, 147 Marines. They take 120 casualties. So yeah, that's, you know, that's I want to, I think it's the greatest single loss of life of any Marine unit during the Vietnam War. So anyway, so I meet Ray. Ray introduces me to Daryl, so we do Daryl's interview first. So yesterday, I was, you know, I was recording, and so if you, again, if you put your hands out in front of you and you separate them, they're shoulder width apart. Okay, now your chest is Kantian. Your right hand is Bravo Company, heading up towards the marketplace up, I think, a dirt road they called Route 571. Alpha Company is your left hand. They're separated by about a click and a half, 1,500 meters, and they're moving north too, towards the DMZ and the Benhai River. Bravo Company gets ambushed and essentially, you know, destroyed. And with, you know, with 26, well, 55 and 20 is 75, with 82 survivors. Okay. With 82 survivors, and they'll medevac 65 of those 82. Yeah, crazy. So anyway, that's what's going on. Alpha Company tries to turn and get there, and the North Vietnamese have an answer for that. And so you'll, Ray's story is very interesting and different of, you know, them knowing going north again like that, there was going to be trouble. And he grew up in Missouri, lives in Colorado now. But he told me something. He said, you know, we got to the Benhai River and we were in a defensive position. And he said, you could see him. He talks about the North Vietnamese coming across the river. He said it was like they were walking on water. And, you know, we got recon units up there, and what they said was there was bamboo steps, right? Not a bridge, but there were steps, and they were just underneath the water. And that those things were maintained, and so that you had to step on each step as you walked across, but it was like an individual, like, step. Like where you put your foot, and it was underneath the water. So they'd take their boots off or leave them on, and they'd come walking across the river. And so, amazing, yeah. So it's, so I mean, you hear things that you don't hear. So you'll get to meet Ray Limbaugh tomorrow. And it's just interesting. My conversations, my conversations with guys like that, and my conversation with Daryl Horn and his wife Marilyn, my conversation yesterday with Ray Limbaugh. Now, I've never met any of these people, right? And I talked to them about what I've learned and about post-traumatic winning. I mean, honestly, I mean, what it does for me is it raises the question in my head if anybody has been paying attention to veterans for decades, or are we just giving veterans what we clinically believe the motherfuckers need from our high perch of our PhD and all that bullshit? Because if you listen to them, if you spend time listening to them, you'll come out with a completely different set of conclusions. And so yesterday, now I don't know Ray from shit, right? So I start talking to him about, you know, what I've learned in doing this program and blah, 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 blah. And he says, you know, we've never met, but you're speaking the exact truth that I've lived. You know, we came home, we didn't talk about it. And so many of us resorted to alcohol and drugs and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And the truth is that you never get over it, right? All these things that are post-traumatic winning, which is just their story. Post-traumatic winning is the story of the veteran. Coming home, you know, trying to quote unquote, get on with your life. Except this shit never goes away. It never goes away. And these people, Daryl and Marilyn, in writing their book, you know, the funny part of, if you haven't listened to it, the third part of Daryl Horn, the interview, is that he talks about getting asked to go give a talk. I can't remember, at a VFW post, a Legion post, or someplace. It might not even been one of those, about love and war on Valentine's Day. And it's pretty funny because I start laughing and he starts laughing. I said, who would ever believe? And he said, I know. I know. He said, I said, but I don't know of a better love story than your love story with Marilyn. You know, high school sweethearts. You know, you're drafted at the age of 23. She has twins while you're gone. You come home and you guys build a life together. And then, you know, just like Ken and Betty Rogers, you tell his story. And in the telling of the story, they begin to touch people's lives and they change their own life. And they change, you know, that as painful as that stuff is, people benefit from it. And so to me, you know, I have this question whether the VA and people that treat veterans are, do you just not listen to them? I just don't get the approach that people have treating veterans. We're going to numb you, right? And we're going to send you to talk about these experiences forever. That's the solution. I find it, I don't want to say crazy, but I find it, I don't know. It's like you can't be serious about helping them. I say this on a fairly regular basis, but nobody ever told me about Viktor Frankl finding meaning in suffering, right? That your suffering and traumatic experiences can have meaning. What? What are you talking about? Right. I discovered that on my own. I have this conversation with Josh Goldberg, you know, a year ago in January. You know, he asked me, you know, he talked about Frankl. He says, clearly you've read Frankl, you know, it's because, you know, the whole giving piece. And I said, I don't know who you're talking about. And he looked at me, he goes, Viktor Frankl. And I said, yeah, I heard you the first fucking time, Josh. And and you know, he looks at me and says, well, where did that come from? I said, it came from Libby Weichel. She taught me that. And he just said, holy shit, man, you got to read Viktor Frankl. But so why am I hearing about Viktor Frankl from a Jewish guy who's helping veterans with no background in mental health other than his desire to help and what he's learned? Why didn't somebody, and then if you're listening to veterans, didn't somebody put a program together to say, this is what you're going to go through, the preemptive part of post-traumatic winning, which is, you know, Sergeant Doe's interview. I mean, this didn't really apply to me. I thought it was awesome. I didn't want to go. Sat through it, thought it was great. And then my father commits suicide 90 days later, and I knew what to do. That's the preemptive part, right? That's the preemptive part. So, again, it's really interesting to talk to Vietnam guys. And, again, I don't know them from anybody. Nobody's referred them to me other than to say, hey, this guy was in Alpha Company 1-9 during Operation Buffalo. And so so you meet him. And you start talking, and then you talk about his life after the war, and and how they got through it, and you hear the exact same things that you hear in post-traumatic winning. But post-traumatic winning is this foreign, it's this foreign substance on a baseball, except it's not. It's the truth. So anyway. I thought I'd share that with you. You'll meet Ray Linebaugh. Yeah, we do the whole interview. The first part, the first segment of the interview, it's like I said, it's a little bit in two parts. And at the end of it, he goes, hey, Mac. I said, yeah. He said, you're pronouncing my name Limbaugh, which most people do. I said, yeah. And he said, it's Linebaugh. And I said, you asshole. So you let me go through the whole thing and you didn't correct me? And he said, sorry about that. I was like, I said, don't think you're not going to pay for that act of aggression on me, because you will. He said, all right, all right. For those of you who listen out there, as we go through this COVID-19 thing, whether you have a family member that's a first responder or a nurse or a doctor, okay, you have got, right, to carry the message that, can I talk to you? Right? Would you be interested to learning? Would you be interested about learning how Marines, and make sure that you tell them, not the Marine Corps, how Marines have learned to cope with trauma? Personal and combat related. I think you'd enjoy it, and I think you'd benefit from it. And there are not too many people that are going to turn that down. And so every one of you listening, yeah, I'm pointing exactly at you. Every one of you listening that knows a nurse, a doctor, or a first responder that's been involved in this, by all means, reach out to them. Reach out to them, and again, not only will you change their life, you will change the lives of people that they will touch with this, and that's really the coolest part of the entire thing. So, good morning to you. Thanks for listening on a Tuesday. The United States Marine Corps band makes this morning official. Good morning to you. We'll be right back. this dedicated to Ray Linebaugh. I should dedicate it to Ray Linebaugh. Yeah, there you go. Just dedicated to Ray Linebaugh. In fact, and that's going to be his name. His name is Linebaugh, but that's not what I'm calling him, and he didn't correct me. So, yeah, this is dedicated to Ray Linebaugh, right, who you'll meet, a plain-spoken guy from Arkansas, the show-me state, and a member of Alpha Company 19, and he and I spent a couple hours together yesterday afternoon. You'll hear it tomorrow as we continue. What it is to fight a peer. And, you know, one of the interesting things about that fight is as terrible as July 2nd was for 1st Battalion 9th Marines, guess what? The sun came up July 3rd, right? And the NVA, we're not done. The NVA, we're not done. So, yeah, so get out there again and be somebody. So anyway, this is dedicated to him, and he's the one that put me in touch with Daryl and Marilyn Horn, and just a wonderful guy.
Betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
When the danger is perceptible and the cost of acting are low, the failure to act guarantees that the threat will grow and the ultimate cost will be higher. Every day that goes by makes North Korea a more dangerous country. You don't like their behavior today? What do you think it'll be when they have nuclear weapons that can be delivered to American cities? Do you want to wait till then to act, or do you want to act now?
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You gotta win.
The reason that I play that little segment every day is because it connects post-traumatic winning, right? The whole concept of winning. You don't come home and you're just a victim, right? With this heavy burden to bear the rest of your life. That you're going to go need to be medicated for and go to group therapy for the rest of your life, right? That is not the only path through life once you've experienced trauma. It is not, right? The concept of winning, particularly the way Marines view it, right? I was created, I walked this earth, right, to knock the shit out of my problem, right? So whatever trauma is in front of me, right, my job is to conquer it, to thrash the shit out of it, boot it in the ass, right, stick it in my pocket, and make that motherfucker mine. Okay, that's Marine, right? Marine 101, will that path, that Brigadoon path, exist? So that whole winning thing, that's why that stays in that thing. The, all right. Take a look at the weather. Cloudy and 55 in Quantico. Partly sunny and 62 at Camp Lejeune. 29 Palms, sunny and 77 already, so be a nice day out in the desert. Pendleton, sunny and 68. Dark cloudy and 69 degrees at Camp Smith in Hawaii. Dark cloudy, 77 degrees at Camp Butler in Okinawa. At Camp Leatherneck in the Helmand province of Afghanistan, it is clear dark and 84. And in Ramadi, it is where we don't, well, in Al Anbar, where Al Asad is, it is sunny and 92. Currently at the home of Almarine Radio, sunny and 68. The wind chill sits at 68, just so you know. Looking for a high of 83 today, 84 tomorrow, and 82. Yeah, memo to the governor, open the fucking beaches, moron. And let me tell you, that guy, the more I watch his act, he's not so smart. Now you have counties in California openly defying his dumb ass. And now the beaches have hours. You can go down there and exercise, but you can't, you know, go to the beach and sit down. Even though, and I was, you know the guy, he started out on MTV, his name's Dr. Drew. I think his name's Dr. Drew Pinsky. Yeah, Channel 11 here in Southern California has Dr. Drew and Dr. Oz live every night, and they talk about local Southern California stuff, right? Which, I mean, come on, pretty big markets. I'm sure they might do something similar in New York, maybe the hour before that or two. But anyway, so I flipped it over there last night, and, you know, they were asking, so what about these, you know, and Dr. Drew said, he said, you know, honestly, it's a head scratcher because this stuff doesn't survive outside. So we should be encouraging people to the greatest extent they can get outside. He said, if you watch the president's briefing and the epidemiologists that were talking about transmission, you know, and not Dr. Fauci and Dr. Burke, but the there was a dude they had on from some, you know, virus, you know, CDC virus study, you know, and he gave the half-life of the coronavirus. It's like nanoseconds outside. And he said, so I just don't get it. We should be encouraging people to get outside. It is healthy, right, to be active and even to go to the beach, social distance, spend the day at the beach. And so anyway, yeah, dude's a moron. We'll check the news. More of Almarine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. Are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
It is Cinco de Mayo. Richie Valens. I'm not a sailor. I'm the captain. Yeah, there you go. Our salute to Cinco de Mayo. So have a shot of tequila at some point today. I'm not much of a tequila person, I have to tell you that. All right, we'll check the news. And then Will Cosentini going to join us. Top headlines in Stars and Stripes. You can only watch so much Netflix. Military leaders in Japan worry about troops' mental health during pandemic. Again, you know, everybody hit the pause button, right? Now you got to unpause it. Now what are you going to do? Right? What are you going to do? And you don't have all the infrastructure in place. You don't have all the testing. You don't have all the tracing. What do you, to live in the, you know, the utopian world that, you know, public health providers talk about? Now what? Well, you know, again, go back to the Roosevelt. 5,000 people. One died. Okay, so that means in most units, nobody's dying. Okay, the virus will get through in healthy populations. protect people that aren't healthy. Right? That's a story in Stars and Stripes. Yokota Air Base. For most military personnel under restriction in Japan, the battle against the coronavirus is more mental than physical. Military officials have reported fewer than 30 service members at Yokosuka and fewer more than other facilities testing positive for the virus out of 50,000 service members stationed there. Now, the question is, how many have the antibodies? Right? Secretary of Defense Mark Esper ordered the military to stop reporting new coronavirus cases at specific installations. Meanwhile, sailors attached to the Yokosuka-based aircraft carrier USS Ronald Reagan and its strike group started a phased sequestration 3 weeks ago to screen out possible cases before going to sea. Phase sequestration. How do I sequester myself? Do I sequester myself from my family? I hope I don't need to do that. Right? But for Petty Officer Third Class Ethan Hisquierdo, an interior communications electrician assigned to the guided missile cruiser USS Shiloh, exercise isn't enough to keep up his morale during restrictions. It's a struggle. Every day I try to work out, but it's a quick high and then I'm down again. He said Monday while buying essentials at the Navy Exchange, one of the only activities outside of home allowed under the shelter in place. I feel like I'm a rich person. Many sailors are idle at home several days at a stretch under reduced manning schedule. He added, quote, I'm not depressed, but I drink a lot more to try to put myself to sleep, he said. You can only watch so much Netflix. An upcoming deployment, likely without port visits, promises little hope of coming relief, he said. The Shiloh is part of Task Force 70. It's going to be another quarantine, he said. Sailors have access to mental health programs offered by the Navy. So, the mental health prize in all of this. Again, you can't keep... I just like California, right? It's good for people to be outside, right? So, the whole social distancing thing outside... Not so much. Yeah, and if you ask that hard question, it's like, well, wait a minute. If it has this half-life, the half-life of a nanosecond outside, when the temperature's over 70 degrees, you know, the social distancing thing outside, well, yeah, that's kind of a nice-to-have thing. You don't really need it, technically, if you believe what scientists say. Anyway. Next headline, USS Theodore Roosevelt skipper says carrier won't wait for all sailors to clear quarantine before going back to sea. Now, in case you don't know, the USS Theodore Roosevelt has a new commanding officer. It's actually the old commanding officer. Yeah, Captain Carlos Sardiello. Right? He was, I think, less than 6 months out of command. And was sent back to the carrier. That's right. The San Diego-based aircraft carrier had been patrolling the Western Pacific before diverting to Guam on March 26 after several sailors required coronavirus treatment. Since then, at least 1,156 have tested positive. One died, crew of 4,800. Quote, we've taken 45 days from that business of patrolling, and it's a dangerous business, so we have a lot of training to complete, the captain told CBS News. He took over last month after the ship's former commander, Brett Crozer, was relieved. Sardiello had preceded Crozer as the carrier's commander, having left the position with Naval Air Force's command 5 months earlier. We have a job to do, he said. It's like no job we have ever faced, but we're U.S. sailors. You know me, I know you. I had your back before, I'm going to have your back now. on the Roosevelt, those embarking, re-embarking on the ship, are given N95 masks to be worn at all times except when sleeping, showering, or eating. What a pain in the ass, huh? Oh, well. In just the news, the story that I would tell you is kind of an interesting little story. There's been rumblings about the pensions of American service members being invested into Chinese companies, and companies, and those companies in part support the Chinese military, right? Can't make it up, right? Can't make it up. Headline, Trump submits federal pension board nominees opening door to cut China investments. Trump nominates three new names to the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board. The nominees, John W. Barger of California, Christopher Bancroft of Burnham, Christopher Bancroft Burnham of Connecticut, and Frank Dunleavy of California. That's right. When they're looking for smart people, you know where they come, California. If confirmed by the Senate, they'll be appointed to the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board. Now, here's what they do. They oversee the Thrift Savings Plan, right, which is the retirement savings fund for the 401k for federal employees and military members. Yeah. If confirmed, the Trump appointees could reverse the board's 2017 decision to allow the TSP's $50 billion international fund to track an index that includes some China-based stocks of companies accused of human rights abuses, violating sanctions, and aiding the Chinese military, according to Reuters. Among the Chinese companies in the index is a surveillance firm, Haiju Hikvision Digital Technology, placed last year on the trade blacklist for its technology being used in detention camps in China's Muslim, where China's Uyghur, is that how you say that? Uyghur, U-I-G-H-E-R, Muslim minorities are held, according to a wire service. So anyway, you know, it's just, sometimes it's unbelievable, the stuff that you read, and you think, well, that can't be true. Come on. Another interesting economic story, I don't normally do them, but the mortgage industry is asking for federal help because people aren't paying their mortgages. Yeah. Right? The mighty mortgage industry needs federal bailout. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. The Senate Armed Service Committee will consider the nomination for the Secretary of Navy in a hearing on Thursday. Yeah, so the Navy might actually get a real-life Secretary of the Navy. Kenneth Brathwaite, currently the U.S. Ambassador to Norway, is the President's nominee to become Secretary of the Navy. So day after tomorrow, his nomination will be considered by the Senate Armed Service Committee. The Navy needs, come on, the Navy needs an adult desperately. He's a 1984 graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy, a retired Rear Admiral, and you know, destined to, or at least ticketed to fill the Navy's top civilian spot. So anyway, to replace Richard Spencer after a couple acting guys in there, and and we'll talk to Will Cosentini about that and the situation relative to the Navy that he faces. And here's the interesting conundrum. When you kind of go down the rabbit hole, because I do believe that the that what's going on with the full investigation into the Roosevelt thing, that is a vote of no confidence for Admiral Gilday, the Navy CNO. And here's, in my opinion, how this goes when we're gonna do issues that are that visible in the country. So we're kind of doing our thing, and what we're coming to is that we think everything lines up, in my judgment as the CNO, to reinstate Captain Crozier. Well, this is a pretty hot, high visible event, and I probably ought to pick up the phone and call General Milley, who I work for, and tell him what's going on and get his input in here so he doesn't, right? This thing doesn't go public and I put him in an awkward situation. So I pick up the phone and I call Milley and I say, hey, this is what our preliminary inquiry is bringing back to me, which is leading me to conclude this. I just wanted your input. And so Milley says to him, hey, just so you know, Crozier's never going to be reinstated. So I think to avoid embarrassment, the best thing for you to do personally as the CNO is to acknowledge it relative to good order and discipline, right? He will not be reinstated, and leave it at that. Because if you recommend something else, what's going to happen is we're going to recommend that a full investigation be done, which will mean, you know, he's out of that seat for months, which means he's not going back. And that will be kind of a, you know, there's a term called soft relief. It means you don't, like, ultimately fire the guy. You reassign him, right? Or you do something else very unceremoniously. It's called soft relief. Yeah. And so you would handle that because of the visibility, you would handle that on the down low. And Gilday, if he's smart, would say, got it. Or he could say, hey, I disagree with you. I will submit that. If you don't reappoint him, I'll offer my resignation, and you can have it if you want it, right? So he stands on principle. But normally, right, as these things go, you pick up the phone, and it's kind of like a team event. Very odd that this would play out in public like it's playing out. So anyway. So the Navy desperately needs some adult, because here's the thing of the thing. The Navy does not need more negative controversy and the appearance of poor leadership. They don't need that. And so in terms of Gilday, when he's looking at it, he's, you know, look, the implications for the DOD, if I reinstate Crozier, is that you can go public with your dissent. Well, what happens when some commanding officer doesn't believe the sexual harassment, case that he ran up didn't receive enough merit, and then he decides to go public with it, or she decides to go public with it, right? What are the implications for the policy? And so, you know, even if I want to, I can't save you from that, and I shouldn't save you from that. So I don't know. The more you look at it, that issue, it's the Navy needs. And again, so then, like I said, the second part of this is, and so we continue this string of controversial, it seems like, bad leadership decisions from your United States Navy that can't seem to do anything right these days. We continue that. The answer is for a couple of reasons. For the sake of good order and discipline, and we're not going backwards on that and throwing this all up in the air, okay? It's done. Let's go. So anyway, interesting. Marine Corps Times, let me see if they have anything worth your time. The Citadel is staging poolies for observation due to COVID-19 before shipping to boot camp. So the Citadel down there in South Carolina is supporting operations in Parris Island. How about that? A public and military college in Charleston, South Carolina, is temporarily staging incoming poolees headed for recruit training for 14 days for observation due to COVID-19. The recruit depot at Parris Island posted images to Facebook of incoming poolees being screened by medical personnel who arrived May 4th at the Citadel. So, Charleston, South Carolina. I've never been there, but I've heard it's a beautiful city. Roughly 300 personnel and 300 poolees are currently housed at the Citadel, according to Captain Brian McDonnell, a spokesman for Marine Corps Recruit Depot, Parris Island. Personnel at the Citadel are restricted to campus grounds to prevent as a preventative measure, and they'll stay there for 2 weeks before they report to Parris Island. So, kind of changes the narrative. 29 Purple Hearts are going to be awarded for injuries sustained by the Iranian ballistic missile attack. U.S. Central Command said 29 Purple Hearts have been approved for soldiers injured in a January 8th ballistic missile attack by the Iranians. The awards were approved by Lieutenant General Pat White, Commander Combined Joint Task Force Operation Inherent Resolve. In all, 80 Purple Heart packages were evaluated individually, and ultimately 39 were approved. So, we've talked about that. Top five stories in Early Bird today. And then we'll take a break, and then Will Constantini's going to join us. Number one, 29 Purple Hearts approved. So, talked about that. Number two, U.S. Navy surface ships enter the Bering Straits for the first time since the mid-80s. So, the Navy, more important than ever. And struggling relative to leadership. To do anything right. And you know, what's interesting is that you go through, and it wasn't, you know, for instance, people say the collisions. Well, not only the collisions, but then they totally screwed up the prosecution of the commanding officers of those ships. You had Navy officers in the chain of command before those things went to court-martial, going around and, quote-unquote, prejudicing, right, through comments that got the cases thrown out. Yeah, so it was like incompetent on top of incompetent on top of incompetent. Number three story. Pentagon chief, USS Kidd coronavirus outbreak may have come from a counter-drug operation. Interesting. Because the USS Roosevelt is thought to have come from not their stop in Vietnam, but from their COD, which is their aircraft flying personnel, mail, picking up parts in different places across the Pacific as the ship moves across the Pacific. So anyway, number four, 51-year-old crushes the Army combat fitness test. Interesting. The first time Sergeant Michael Murray, 51, is about to graduate basic combat training again. The first time was in 1992 when Murray attended infantry one-station unit training at Fort Benning. He later commissioned as an officer, earned a law degree from the University of Southern California, racked up 17 years on active duty, Army Reserve, and National Guard service. 3 years ago, he left the military to work in the private sector for Port St. Lucie, Florida, according to Fort Jackson news release. But Murray decided he wanted to finish off his military career, so he enlisted once again, headed off to Fort Jackson in South Carolina for a second round of basic training earlier this year. Quote, "At one point, I never thought I would go back, but I took a look at myself, and I was feeling good," Murray said. "I just had the urge to finish what I started." Yeah, not to mention to get his retirement. But so he goes back in as a sergeant? So he crushes the combat fitness test. After he graduates, he'll be working to pin on the EOD badge, Murray will attend 8 weeks of advanced training at Fort Lee in Virginia before heading back to his home state for 28 weeks of EOD training at Eglin Air Force Base in the Florida Panhandle. I just wanted to serve my state. I didn't just want to sit back and be an observer during state emergencies. My unit was the only way I could join. Said the only way I could join is that I had to enlist, but that's the job I wanted, the job of a team leader. So there you have it. 51 years old. That's right. So, hey, any 51-year-olds out there that still want to serve, go back to basic training? That's Army stuff. Marine Corps, we don't do that. Yeah, no, sorry. Sorry, Grandpa, you ain't coming back in the Marine Corps. Number five, Senator pushes for hazard pay for guardsmen, active duty troops on coronavirus response deployment. I don't know about that. Does that mean anybody who gets mobilized and responds to any emergency, right, gets hazard pay? I mean, is that appropriate? Do they already? I'm not exactly sure. If they do, when you do any major contingency, then I think it would be appropriate. If they don't, I don't know. Somebody would have to present a case that makes this more dangerous than responding to hurricanes and tornadoes and things like that. Overseas operations. B-1 bombers are back in Guam for the bomber task force deployment. So this is part of a kind of General Mattis thing where we would surge capacity at different, you know, at irregular intervals. Next story. What is Op Plan 5029, the Mission Impossible style plan in place to secure North Korea's nukes? Yeah, the South Koreans are like, yeah, we're not going up there. According to U.S. Secretary of Defense Mark Esper, the Afghan peace process is behind schedule. So this is the second story this week that you've, series of stories that you've seen come out that talk about the Afghan peace process. And the United States is saying it's not going. There were unwritten agreements that were made. And now you have Secretary Esper following that original story up by saying, yeah, it's behind schedule, which is, again, I would say a gentle nudge to somebody saying, look, man, if you don't want to do this, then maybe we won't do it. But the President of the United States desperately wants out of Afghanistan. Four, in terms of overseas operations, Afghanistan troop withdrawal may hinge on power-sharing deal. And the power-sharing deal that it's alluding to is the power-sharing deal between the guys who claim to be elected and neither one disagrees on either. Neither one agrees on that. So you had the guys that are supposed to represent the federal government that can't agree who won the election. So anyway, so that in the news. And then U.S. Special Operations troops turn to drones to remotely advise Iraqis. So that means, no, turn to your left, turn to your left, turn to your left. We'll take a break. All right. We'll take a break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it. Will Costantini going to join me? So don't touch that dial. He's a smart guy. We'll talk about some of this stuff, and we'll talk about Will's life. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.